Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Kyle and Patrick's Yet to Be Named podcast. This week, we are joined by a special guest. We're joined by a guest. We'll put it that way. Dan Abern, who's an inside lacrosse writer, focusing mostly on recruiting stuff. Do you want to introduce yourself, Dan?
Hey guys, what's up? I guess I'm not a special guest. I'm just regular guest. I'm not very special.
I was trying to make a joke. I don't know how funny it ended up being, but I tried. But yeah, it's your first time appearing on the podcast, so welcome to the show, I guess. But anyways, the first thing we wanted to talk about this week was my little rant that turned into a rather large discussion on Twitter this past Saturday regarding wall ball. So just to give a quick summary, I started off with a couple of tweets. What inspired me to talk about it was the U.S. Lacrosse wall ball challenge, where basically they were sort of trying to challenge kids to download an app and get 10,000 reps on the wall. And so my fundamental issue with that was that you're encouraging kids just to focus on getting as many reps as possible, which means if you're trying to get as many wall ball touches as possible, given the amount of time you're going to spend playing wall ball, that's going to incentivize you to do mostly strong hand, mostly overhand, stuff that you're comfortable with so you don't drop the ball, and you can do it quickly to get in as many reps as possible. My argument is that if you're going to play wall ball, that's not the most effective way to get better, that you should be challenging yourself, working on offhand, behind the backs, things where you're going to drop the ball or not throw it accurately, not be able to do it as quickly, because that's how you'll actually be able to get better on the wall. Reaction, guys?
I mean, I agree with that argument a lot, actually. I mean, a lot of people would say that more reps equals more success, but I think when it comes to wall ball, quality is better than quantity when it comes to your repetitions. That's pretty much the basis of my argument.
Yeah, and I mean, all other things being equal, more reps is better. It's just that given that you're going to spend an hour on the wall, all things are not equal.
Do you have any thoughts, Kyle?
I mean, so here's my thing. And, you know, obviously we're going to talk about how this mushroomed into something else. Definitely out of my control, for sure. And I definitely contributed to that as well. But I think for wall ball means different things to different players. I think a lot of players get their start at wall ball and get into a routine. It's like any other kind of workout. You know, I do wall ball pretty much all day, like in between like little sessions, because I have a stone wall in my place. So I will take a break and do, you know, 50 reps on my right hand. And I know that that's not my right hand's my strong hand. I know it's not making me better, but I think it's like a comfort thing. And I think that people took it the wrong way, what you were saying. And they were saying people like kind of twisted your words into like wall ball isn't important. Of course, wall ball is important. It's just that it's not the only thing that makes you better. But I think that what maybe wasn't communicated by either side is that, you know, how I approach it is like it's part of how I train and relax. Like wall ball is important to me as like not just a lacrosse player, but someone in lacrosse, as something that is it contributes to like my understanding of my stick, which is actually a point that Kevin Rice made on Twitter. It contributes to, you know, just getting in touch and like kind of zoning out and getting your muscle memory back, which I know wasn't even part of your contention at all. But I think some people kind of just took it that extra step and misinterpreted what you were saying as pejorative. And I know it wasn't, because I know you. And some people were like, well, he's trolling. I'm like, yo, he's not trolling. Patrick doesn't know how to troll. Okay?
No, that's very true. I have so many legitimate opinions that I don't have time to mess around with fake ones.
Yeah, that's what I'm for. That's what I do. Like, yeah, that's why we're on a podcast. We're complete opposites when we approach stuff like that, you know?
You bring up good points that I think when I was talking about using wall ball to get better, and I think there's kind of a misconception by a lot of people that just because you're playing wall ball doesn't necessarily mean that your intent is to get better. I do the same thing that you were talking about. Like, I'll throw it off the wall just for fun, just messing around, just because I enjoy it with my strong hand overhand, even though it's not making me better, I don't think, or not substantially, but I just enjoy it. Or if you're filling out a new stick, you're stringing up a new pocket, trying to get a feel for it, trying to figure out how much whip a stick has, if you want to adjust it, that sort of thing. There's all sorts of reasons to do wall ball. Not all of them are necessarily about getting better.
Right.
That's true. I mean, there's a difference between, I know for me personally, going to the wall before a game to get your, you know, get blood into your arms, get blood into your triceps, get your stick in cahoots with your brain, and then there's wall ball, you know, during the summer that makes you better as a player.
Right, exactly. And I say, like, wall ball, you know, pregame warm-up of any kind, whether it's on the wall, you're not really trying to get better as much as you're trying to maximize your performance during the game by getting warmed up.
Exactly.
So, and it ended up kind of spiraling out of control, and I think, as you said, Kyle, a lot of it, people misinterpreted what I said. I'm coming up, I am working on some more direct responses to what some people said, as well as a more comprehensive, I'd say, academic paper referenced look at wall ball and how, if you are using wall ball to try to get better, what you should be doing.
Yeah, and I think that's good and expected. But, you know, we can't have this podcast and not at least address it, because it definitely, you know, became a thing right before the MLL semifinals. And, you know, and the timing of it was a little like, whoa, wait a minute. Are we really going to get into this right now? Like, I got to go cover the MLL semifinals. I can't stay in this, you know. And it's one of those things that just turned into, you know, lacrosse Twitter's thing for the day. And that happens. It's just that I think the responses to you were completely out of line. And that's why, you know, I explained my, you know, kind of, I guess you could say my retorts were vicious. I don't think they were vicious. I think they were, like, strong. Like, I don't.
But it's also, you know, some of those were to people you know. I think that's one thing, too, that people don't appreciate in general about Twitter arguments.
Right.
Is there's a line where you can cross on Twitter with people that you know in real life, because, yes, you know, you have an understanding, or you can follow up, you know, privately with somebody, that you don't necessarily want to cross with people that you don't know. And so there's, like, people just, for example, I had a private conversation with Scott Ratliff about the wall ball tweets, about our disagreements. Because I've met him in real life. We from time to time chat, you know, not through public tweets. And so I'm willing to sort of say things to him potentially that I wouldn't be willing to say to somebody that I've never met or never talked to and don't have any relationship with outside of Twitter.
Yeah, that's like a filter, and I don't really have one of those. So I had no problem doing it, and that's why I had stronger worded responses than you. And I actually knew all the people that were involved with the negative side of it too. And, you know, they knew there's a certain level of like, oh, that's just Kyle being a jerk, or that's Kyle being Kyle. And it's, oh God, third person hit me in the face. Sorry. But it's the person versus the persona argument that I have a lot with those guys in particular that didn't get it. And, I think they knew I was mad. I was mad. I didn't think that you should have been treated the way you were treated. And I think people need to have a little bit more respect for, you know, academic opinions and read through all the tweets, not just read like one tweet that, to be fair, not to defend them, but it could have easily been misinterpreted, right?
Right, but that's true. I mean, that's the risk, I guess, that you take when you tweet things, is that somebody can just take one tweet out of context and misinterpret it when it's part of a whole rant.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's, you know, what started all of it. Not that you were wrong, but that someone took it the wrong way, which I think is important to address. But I'm going to be honest. I think we've spent too much time now. We're going to move it on. I promise this is a not get fired podcast. So we're going to move on to the proposed rule changes by the NCAA. I'm going to let you guys go first and tackle this. I think my opinions are pretty well known on any rule changes.
Okay, well, I think with rule changes, though, it's important to distinguish between the proposed rule changes that are probably almost certainly are very likely to are likely to be implemented and likely to actually happen. Right. And those were the face-off tweaks and the clearing timeout change, which I think is both of which I think are really not significant, or they're not that impactful. The face-off one just clarifies that basically the ref is supposed to put the ball in the middle of the sticks, not closer to the head or throat of one stick versus the other. And so I think there are a lot of people who misinterpreted that because the press release was not worded very well. And so the 5 inches that it talked about, that's 5 inches from the head of the stick. And since sticks are 10 inches long, 5 inches is right in the middle. And the clearing and the timeout one, my assumption is that's really only something that coaches who are trying to figure out when to call timeouts and referees are probably going to be concerned about or impacted by. The casual fan really is going to not have any idea that that rule even changed.
Exactly.
I don't know if you guys, is there anything else to add to those?
I mean, I think we should address the whole
Twitter
backlash against the whole 2-point rule, because that seemed to really get a lot of criticism. I mean, most people initially thought it was a 2-point line, and then they realized it's actually just 2 points after you gain possession, and within 30 seconds you score, you get 2 points.
Right, but I think it's important. It's important, though, to just put that in context, though. That is one of the experimental rules that was proposed. So that's, my understanding is that just gives coaches and referees, whoever, the go-ahead to use that rule in a scrimmage this fall or during practice. But I guess there's nothing that stopped them from using it during an internal team practice anyways. But it provides some sort of formal context, I guess, to utilize that rule in a scrimmage against another team during fall ball.
Yes.
Also, it's really dumb.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, we'll get into that. But that's why I think it's not a rule that you have to be worried about. It's not going to be used in the spring. There's zero chance that it's used in this, that it actually becomes a real rule during this rule cycle, I think, is the important context to provide for people. But
That's why it's dumb, Patrick.
No, it is dumb. It is dumb. Does somebody want to take the lead on explaining why it's so dumb?
I mean, just why not just do the shot clock? I think that they're hesitant to do the shot clock because it's going to be so wildly successful that they'll be like, oh no, we have to actually implement this right away.
You think that? That's interesting. That's an interesting take. I think they're avoiding the shot clock as long as they can, but that not too. For that reason. Not for that reason. I think they're just avoiding it as long as they can because, you know, coaches give up a measure of control with the shot clock. I mean, that's just a fact of the game. Like, you give up a measure of your control over the possession with a shot clock as opposed to the stall clock that's being used now. I don't know why you wouldn't play the fall with a shot clock. That makes no sense to me. Unless, they know it's not going to pass for another 2 years.
They already have. They've played fall games.
No, I know they have, but why aren't they doing it again? Like, why wouldn't you do it again? Like, try it again. Give it a whirl.
That's a good question. I'm not really sure how the experimental rules work, and if an experimental rule was passed in the past, can you still use it if you want to? Or is it only these experimental rules for this rules cycle that you're allowed to use?
Don't know about that.
That sounds really limiting if it's true, and yeah. I doubt that it's true. I don't think that doesn't make any sense.
Wait,
I mean,
which
if
side?
It is true, no. So your contention that if you do a shot clock as an experiment, you can't do it again. What if you change the length of the shot clock?
That's not what I said. No. I meant like that. I know the shot clock was an experimental rule in the past. Does that mean once it's an experimental rule, is it an experimental rule forever? And so there's like somewhere a whole list of a bunch of them that have all been passed, and you're allowed to use any of them, or is it only the like four experimental rules they passed for this rule cycle? Those are the only four currently in effect that you're allowed to use.
If every experimental rule was like up for interpretation for every scrimmage, they wouldn't be playing lacrosse. They'd be playing like cricket or something. Like that's how many experimental rules there have been. Like it's insane.
Yeah.
That's not the case. I hope it's not the case. But the point of contention remains the same. Like if you're going to have the option of using a shot clock and you know that it's inevitable, which by the way, guys, it's inevitable. It's coming. You know it's coming. It came for any sport that needs it like this, okay? It's not even NCAA hockey, okay? They're not going to get one. We're going to get one. It's just a matter of how long it's going to be and when it gets passed. You know, why wouldn't you try 60 seconds? Why wouldn't you try 90? You know, why wouldn't you try, like, 120? Yeah. Like, give it a whirl.
No, I agree, because I think that's a big thing that coaches, when we were talking with coaches this past December during the IMCLA convention, that was a big question they had, was I think a lot of them thought it was inevitable and that it was coming this rule cycle, and they just wanted to know how long it should be.
Yeah.
And so I think that's like the fall experimentation to allow them to formulate their opinions on it, I think is something that should have happened.
I think 90 makes sense. But that's just – I've always thought that. And not from when you touch the ball into the box, 90. I mean, like, you get possession on your side of the field and it's 90, just like MLL. And MLL's – MLL's 60. But I think that's when it starts. That's 90. And then that will encourage more transition play. It really will.
Yes. The whole idea of starting it anywhere else, not having it be a possession clock that starts on possession, is – I think ridiculous. I don't think there's any other league in any sport that has a shot clock, whether it's basketball or lacrosse, that it isn't a true possession clock.
Right.
That I think the idea that you have like 30 seconds to clear it across the midfield line, then it starts. I think that's a Bill Tierney plot to slow down transition.
Okay,
that's fair.
I also would not be surprised if this 2-point rule is also a Bill Tierney Trojan horse to slow down transition. Because I think he knows that it's coming, and he's trying to figure out how he can tell people that some rule is going to speed up the game when it will actually slow it down.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, listen, if you're going to mess around with the 2-point, like, bonus that you're never going to put in the game, just, like, throw an arc in and play the whole game with a 2-point arc. See what happens. Try it out. Maybe the MLL has been right all along.
They can't do that until Perkovic graduates.
That's a good
point. It's not fair. It's not fair. Otherwise, you'd have been like the number one recruit in the country.
True.
Distance. Kids will be starting to train on that 20-yard shot.
The 2-point, because I think the two big impacts that you'll see with that rule, if anybody plays it, is you'll see far more conservatively placed wings on faceoffs.
Exactly.
Because that will be what's said in the huddle before every faceoff by every head coach is, for the love of God, whatever you do, don't let them get a fast break and score a 2-pointer.
You know what it's going to kill, though? You know, I mean, it doesn't happen in the MLL because the athletes are too good, but I think that what the 2-point line, if you put it in college right now, it would kill a lot of 10-man rides.
The 2-point line?
Yes. Yeah. Because if you turn it over in transition and your goalie's out of position, it's, I mean, that happens in the MLL too, by the way. I remember at least 4 instances where it's the goalie's fault that he's out of the net and he makes a turnover, either he's running it up or whatever, and the other team somehow gets possession of the ball, makes one quick pass, or just puts it in from distance, and it's an easy 2 points. Obviously, the Galloway one with Brody Merrill scoring on Galloway from 90 yards is the most famous one, but, you know, I can remember Will Manny doing it against the Bayhawks. So Boston's my 3 examples. Justin Turry did it against the launch in the last game as well. So there's a couple ways that can bite you back, which I mean, that's a good point by them, though. Like, I like the 10-man ride in college more than I like it in the pros, for sure. So that's like an added thing
nice
that maybe just like popped
option.
Into my head.
It's nice to have an option, because it's one of those things that encourages at the college game, it leads to more back and forth, more transition play. You know, I think you're right. And that was my next point was going to be that it's going to cause teams in transition to start playing super conservative transition defense and rides, that basically the goal of every ride will become to make them take as long as possible to clear it, not to actually cause a turnover.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It'll the just most to run efficient as much way of that 30-second clock as possible. And that's why this plays into Denver's hands so much, though, is because what does Denver already do? Every team against them on faceoffs is worried about Baptiste getting fast breaks. So they play their wings and their faceoff guy really conservatively and just let him win it. So that's not a change for Denver, because that already happens to them. And it just means when Baptiste does create a transition opportunity, it's now worth 2 points. And secondly, Denver, when they ride, they play super conservatively, and they just drop everybody back into the hole and try to not give up a fast break and play 6-on-6. So creating an incentive for them to do that doesn't change anything.
Exactly. I mean, like, for every experimental rule, the next, you know, the game plan is about preventing that experimental rule from succeeding, essentially. I mean, I can see it happen at Denver. I can see it happen at Maryland. A lot of places.
That's why I think people who think that this rule is going to speed up the game, the experimental rule, are just wrong. That it's this plays into the hands of the way teams like Maryland and Denver play, not the way like Brown plays. Brown hates it when teams just drop everybody into the hole and just play not to give up any transition whatsoever, because that hurts their transition.
Exactly.
Totally agree. Let's go back to the timeout.
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
No, like, you guys take it away. I just think that, like, changing something that is so situational is, like, a nothing rule. I feel like it's a nothing rule. Like, it changes one situation, right?
Right, yeah. And I think, honestly, I didn't even realize that was, like, a loophole that existed, that they're trying to close. So yeah. I can't think of a situation of where it came into play in a game that I watched that was important.
Yeah, I know for the timeout rule, I was like, that this loophole exists. And then for the face-off, I was like, I've never taken a face-off in my life. I can't even, like, visualize how this will affect the game. So I didn't really have an opinion on it.
We have a staff post coming out, and I think one of the points that I made in it was, you know, wasn't last year the best year for face-offs consistency-wise? Like, in terms of the officiating and also the outcome? Wasn't there, like, the lowest level of cheating, quote-unquote cheating, and, like, penalties that there had ever been? Like, aren't we good with the face-off? Can we just leave it alone?
No, the rule doesn't change anything.
Yeah, it doesn't.
No, I know, but, like, it just clarifies something that they should have been doing the whole time anyway, and good refs were already doing.
Exactly.
Right.
Just
right, so
it,
for all intents and purposes, does leave it alone.
It's just changing stuff for the sake of saying you're changing something, and that's what, honestly, it's annoying. Like, I'm annoyed by the whole thing.
But yeah. If it's a case, though, where some refs weren't doing it, and players were complaining, and the refs were just like, I don't care because I don't have to, it doesn't specify where I have to put the ball, it doesn't have to be in the middle, I mean, that kind of sucks.
I got news for you guys. Bad ref's gonna bad ref.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. If you're a bad ref, you're a bad ref. You're really not gonna get that much better unless you're younger. And you're part of this, like, new generation of refs. Like, refs that have been refing forever and are just, like, listening to these, like, rule changes are just kind of like, whatever. Whatever. Bad ref's gonna bad ref. I'm not saying all refs are like that, by the way. But I am biased to being negative against refs because I was a coach for so long, and I always clash with refs. But that's also part of where I was and the vicinity of where I was. But I think that it's a case where maybe they had enough complaints where that refs weren't doing this anyway, which, again, they should have been doing it anyway, that they had to make a rule, which kind of should tell you there's some bad refs. Right?
Yeah, and maybe the reason they don't want to put a shot clock is that would make the refs actually have to get in shape. Have you ever seen a skinny MLL ref? I'm not a conspiracy guy.
Dan Abram said that.
I'm
not
a connected
not
dots
me.
Guy, just like the you know, the Barstool guys. Like, it makes sense.
But
come on.
But the refs have nothing to do with the decision, though. It's all coaches and administrators.
Right, I know. It's just but the coaches are the ones that talk to the refs about it and are talking to their players who are talking to the refs. So I mean, it's still the conclusion remains the same. The reasoning is also the same. It's just coming from a different vantage point. I think that's enough for experimental rules that aren't going to happen.
Do you want to talk NFHS rules?
No.
I don't have the strength. I need to save it for our MLL discussion. I need to end the Space Jam. So up next, you guys have a topic that I literally can leave the room for this topic. I don't really have any thoughts that are positive, so I'll probably not contribute. But you guys want to talk Olympics, lacrosse in the Olympics? Is that a thing you're going to talk?
I guess why not, you know?
Yeah, go for it.
Yes. I mean, it's very timely right now.
It's a topic of discussion. on the social lacrosse Twitter, lacrosse social media. That
this is the one topic that just refused to die.
Yeah. Okay. Do you want to go? I have a hot take on this. But do you want to go first, or should I?
I mean, if you've got the hot take, you should go first. I feel like then I can rebuttal it. Maybe go ahead.
Okay. My hot take is that I am opposed to Olympic lacrosse until we find a way to let the Iroquois play.
I guess that's a hot take. I don't know. Like, I mean, I think for people around the office, that's one of the biggest barriers to, like, completely agreeing that the Olympics should have lacrosse, is that the Iroquois would not be able to play, but they would have to choose between playing for the U.S. or playing for Canada. And that just doesn't seem fair.
Would they even be able to do that? I mean, I guess FIL could change the rules, but if they play for the U.S. or Canada in international competition, wouldn't they then be ineligible to play for the Iroquois at the next World Championships?
Possibly, yeah. I'm not sure about that.
No, FIL doesn't care.
Like, yeah, probably. I mean, I assume the FIL... Well, I mean, they do. That's why Ty Thompson couldn't play for the U.S. at the World Indoors. Because he had
played
an exhibition game.
Why did Brandon Mundorf play for Australia and then play for USA then?
There has to be a certain amount of time that has to pass in between competitions. Yeah. But he played for the Iroquois field team in an exhibition game leading up to the 2014 World Championships. Then he wasn't on the team for the actual World Championships, but then he couldn't play for the U.S. indoor team last summer at the World Indoors because not enough time had passed in between him making an appearance for the Iroquois team and playing for the U.S. team.
Yeah. But that's your take, Patrick?
Yeah, I just think whatever the highest level of international competition, I think it has to include the Iroquois.
I don't disagree with that. I definitely think that those players need to be at the game, but it becomes a real problem with the whole passport issue and stuff like that.
No, it has nothing to do with the passport issue. It's entirely that the Iroquois Federation isn't recognized by the IOC. Like, they don't have an Olympic committee. There is no Iroquois National Olympic Committee.
True.
And I don't know if it's possible to have them recognized. And I think it's potentially a chicken and egg situation where they won't bother to create an Olympic committee and become recognized until lacrosse is in the Olympics and they have a reason to.
Yes, I would think so.
So in that, maybe it won't happen, like, you know, until it's in the Olympics. But then if I don't think they should be in the Olympics until they have a team or until they're allowed to participate, then it will never be in the Olympics. But I just think that the game was came from them, and so I think
it doesn't feel right to exclude them.
Yeah, not to allow them to represent their own people and their own culture at the highest level of the international competition is wrong.
Exactly, I pretty much agree with that statement. I mean, for me, here's my take: is that I think that anybody who is a fan of the game, is a player of the game, they inherently want Olympics. I mean, they want lacrosse in the Olympics. It's just that if I'm going to watch it, I don't want it to be, you know, a gold medal game between the USA and Canada every 4 years. I just don't think that's fair. It's not fair to us as players. It's not fair to us as fans. And I just don't think it's fair to the other nations. I mean, like, we look at the U19 FIL games this past summer. We all kind of thought that it was going to be the USA and Canada going for that gold medal, and these other teams kind of struggling for the other places. Any thoughts?
Oh yeah, I mean it was incredibly predictable, and I also just wonder. It's not a case where we can't get lacrosse on TV.
Yeah,
we maybe don't have as much as we would like, but there are lacrosse games on TV that people can watch that have no real competition from other sports. I'm not entirely sure that there's a huge benefit to getting an extra game or two on TV. When people, their sports focus would be on a bunch of other Olympic events anyways. And, because, I mean, there's no drama in the pool play, in the prelims, after the U.S.-Canada game, really, if the Iroquois were involved.
Exactly.
And I also think that the game with the international rules, with no type of stalling, really, other than to keep it in at all, I'm not sure that's the best... version
format
of the sport that we want people watching. I would rather push for people. If people had to watch one lacrosse thing, I would much rather have them watch Championship Weekend, the NCAA Championship Weekend.
True, and there's been discussion that, you know, the FIL's current format would not necessarily be the same format that would be played in the Olympics. In fact, there might be even a discussion that it'd be something like rugby sevens, where you change the amount of players on the field, you change the time format completely. So I think I read today, you know, something about how U.S. lacrosse kind of wants to do something like that, and they have to consider maybe doing some sort of field and box hybrid.
U.S. lacrosse wants to do something?
That's okay. I haven't heard anything about this, but that sounds stupid.
The point is, it's like you can't really package, you know, a 2-hour lacrosse game the way that kind of FIL has marched out, you know, in the past couple of world championships. It doesn't make sense, I think, from a broadcasting perspective.
So do you think that box lacrosse has a better chance of getting into the Olympics than field lacrosse?
Perhaps, maybe.
No, for that reason. Far less competitive. There aren't enough countries that play. Like, there's no...
But I think as a format, it's much more appealing.
Yeah.
Because then it kind of makes it like, you know, basketball, which is already an Olympic sport.
Of the, like, medal games, none of them were even close. The Canada smoked the Iroquois. The Iroquois smoked the U.S., and the U.S. smoked the fourth-place team.
I mean, we're kind of talking about competition, but it's, like, both ways. I mean, you could say that, you know, Canada's going to smoke in box, and then the USA might smoke in field. I mean, like...
Except that the competition... The U.S. doesn't crush Canada in field.
Right. I think what you're all ignoring is that everyone wants to see the U.S. drop 40 on Belize.
Yeah.
Right?
That's
what we want. Listen, Americans love winning, and they love winning by a lot. I don't know if you've seen a lot of this in the Olympics coverage, but they're only showing stuff that we're destroying other countries at.
That's why I haven't heard about USA basketball a lot, because they're only beating, like, you know, Spain and Argentina by 3 points.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe. I guess that's now for my, I don't know, in lacrosse, I'd rather see a competitive game. I don't know.
I mean, that's what we're saying, is that I think 2024 for, you know, lacrosse and the Olympics is a reasonable, you know, time to maybe add it. But there's so much investment, money and strategy and knowledge that needs to be exported to other countries to actually make them competent at these games. I mean, like, it costs a lot of money to send athletes to the Olympics, and, you know, we don't want to send, you know, a team that's going to get smoked 40 goals to get the USA to the Olympics.
No, that's fair. That's fair. I just wonder too, like, in terms of growing the game, what has the Olympics done for the growth of gymnastics in the U.S.?
I mean, I wouldn't know. I mean,
there's far more people who play lacrosse than do gymnastics.
Are you sure?
Yes,
in the world, like,
not in the world, but in the U.S.
Okay, well, Stick It did a lot to move it. That movie. Missy Peregrine did it, but she's Canadian.
And I think...
Maybe. But I just think there's so many more steps if you're talking about putting lacrosse in front of, like, how about let's have a way for people in Canada to watch the MLS Championship?
Yeah.
Like, there's so much other work to be done that it's not high on my priority list.
Well, that's the thing, is that I think people think that by putting lacrosse in the Olympics, it will inherently grow the game, but I think that's a fallacy, because I think the game has actually considerably grown a lot, particularly since, like, the early 1980s. It's just that the knowledge, the coaching isn't there for the other nations, and that's what needs to kind of be improved on.
The caliber of athlete is not there either that would participate in it, and that's really what the issue is. It's just no one's been, you know, remunerate on how, like, which players are actually playing, you know, for nations that are just starting lacrosse, and it's guys that can't do anything else. I don't want people that, like, get cut from the swim team to go play lacrosse. That's, like, already something that's happening in the United States, and I don't want it to happen in international play because it'll make it even worse.
Exactly. Like, when I was in the UK and I played and coached in the UK, most of my teammates were kids who didn't make the rugby club team, and they wanted a violent sport to play, so they chose lacrosse. And when I got there, you know, the stick skills were not really there. They all thought that playing like Lyle Thompson was kind of like normal. I saw way too many horizontal cradles that should have never happened. So it needs to grow a little bit. You know, the knowledge base needs to expand. There's so much investment that needs to happen before lacrosse even considers joining the Olympics.
Right, and I just think there's so many better players like playing in the MLL that people aren't watching that I would rather, if we're going to get people's focus on something, you know, have it be on championship weekend, have it be on the MLL, where we already have far better players than are going to be playing in most of the international games that are already playing that you can watch.
I agree with that. I mean, I know for me, people always say grow the game. We want other, you know, nations playing this game. But the truth is that there's some serious, you know, lack of knowledge in parts of our own country that need to be improved on. Let's kind of do that first before we think about the world. And I agree with your sentiment, Patrick.
They're not mutually exclusive. I mean, people can work to grow. Growing the game can be done in the U.S. and other countries. It's not, you know, necessarily a direct trade-off.
Exactly.
And I think both of them are certainly worthwhile. But it's just, I think the amount of attention that American sports fans have, or from any country, for lacrosse, is there's only a certain amount. And I think we already have some top-notch events that, you know, are on TV and are attracting tens of thousands of people to attend and watch. And I'm not sure if putting the Olympics out there as the preeminent event for people to pay attention to and watch, if it really does us any good.
No, I agree with that.
Versus promoting those other events that are already happening and are already on TV for people to watch.
Exactly. I mean, I think priority number one, if we're really talking about growing the game, is getting championship weekend, you know, on ESPN, not ESPN2 or ESPNU, and having people go to the stadium and watch the games. And then, of course, you know, getting MLL watched.
But right, and a lot of that is just, that's just, we need more fans. And I'm not sure that, I don't think that putting lacrosse in the Olympics is going to do all that much in terms of creating new fans that will then turn and go and watch the MLL or watch college and show up to championship weekend just because they saw it in the Olympics.
It might. I think that's a fair point, but it's also not a 100% certainty point. You know what I mean? I really feel like Americans like winning. And that's the kind of like, I made light of it earlier, but like if it's another gold medal that or another sport that we can dominate at, there's a certain level of person or a certain subset of person that's going to be like, yo, hey, look at this thing I've never seen before. We are killing them. This looks awesome. And it's the first game you see and everyone's wearing USA on their chest. I think that like that's an American kind of like view of it.
No, that's
and it's very simplistic, and I'm very much breaking it down. I'm not disagreeing with any of your points. I'm just saying that having an American view lacrosse for the first time, and it's Olympics, and it's in the Olympics, and it's the USA versus, you know, Great Britain, or it's the USA versus Australia or something, and we're doing really well against them, and that's those are nations that do well traditionally in the Olympics, and we're doing so well against them. I think there's something to be said for like a certain subset of people that's going to be like, hey, look at this thing I've never seen before. This looks fun. Oh man, we're really good at this as a nation, huh? Do we have this around me? You know, I'm in Idaho. Do we have this? That's like a thing that could happen. I'm in South Dakota. Do we have lacrosse? Let's go try that out.
Exactly. I mean,
but how many people are doing that with gymnastics? Like the U.S. gymnastics teams crushed everybody this past week. How many people are going to start doing gymnastics because of that?
Probably a lot. Probably a lot of little girls.
I mean, yeah, a lot of people are going to get inspired. I mean, I know gymnastics, I don't think is a fair comparison because it requires such, there's a very, very high, you know, genetic standard that you have to meet. You have to be very, you know, you have to be this height, you have to be this weight. But think about swimming. Like, how many, you know, kids say, oh, I want to be Katie Ledecky, I want to be Michael Phelps in 10 years. I mean, I think the impact that they've had has inspired so many people. And also think about handball, you know.
But who's watching? There's a Sports Pickle article making fun of the fact of, like, Michael Phelps is the first pick in the pro swimming league.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How many people, like, where are all the fans of non-Olympic swimming?
I mean, I can swim.
Yeah.
But I can't swim at the Olympic level. You know, I think
that... No, but I'm not talking about you being able to swim. I'm talking about how many... When you watch Michael Phelps in the Olympics swimming, are you then, because of that, are you then seeking out to watch him swim any other time of the year?
No, that's not the point, though. The point is that you see him swim, and you see him win gold medals. That's why you watch him swim. You don't watch him swim to be like, wow, look at that technique. You watch him swim to win.
But that doesn't grow the game, then. That just if you're watching it just because it's the U.S. beating other countries in the Olympics, you're a fan of the Olympics.
What else do we watch the Olympics for? Hold on. Time out. What else do we watch the Olympics for? The competition of stuff?
Right.
Like, it's cool when, like, sprinters fall down or, like, distance runners fall down and get helped up. Like, that's a good story. But I don't watch the Olympics for that. I'm watching the Olympics because I like watching basketball and I like watching the USA team, even though they're not as good as they should be. But I actually like that. And I like watching them win.
Yeah.
Those are the two reasons I watch. I don't watch, like, other sports. That's just me, though. Like, that's why I didn't want to jump in on this, because my Olympic hot take is, like, too hot. It's, like, a little bit of lava going in here. Like, we don't want that.
That's my point, though, is that you're not watching. Like, watching all these other sports doesn't make you a fan of those sports. So many people watch the Olympics just because they're a fan of the Olympics. They just want to see the U.S. beat people and win gold medals.
Right, but that's...
It's not necessarily an effective vehicle for growing
sports. I don't have
sports.
The dominant viewpoint, though. I think that it does influence people that are like, okay, I can't do this. Maybe I can do this. Like, well, look at... It's an inspiring thing. Dan's right. The Olympics are inspiring. And some people do watch them to get inspired and get into these sports. And, you know, sometimes those people fail at those sports. But sometimes they don't, and they stick with it, and they succeed. And then they go to the Olympics themselves. I mean, that's the great story of the Olympics, right? Is that it's a competition between the entire world. And you get inspired by other people before you of your nation doing well.
Exactly. And think about, like, a sport like handball, which I don't think a lot of people in the U.S. knew about until the Olympics. That the interest in handball has, like, exploded. People are like, whoa, this is, like, a real thing? Like, let's do this. Let's give it a try. Like...
The same thing happened 4 years ago. And how are there more people playing handball in the U.S. now than there were 4 years ago?
Probably, actually. Because more exposure can never be bad, can it?
No, that's not my point isn't that more exposure, you're right. More exposure is definitely good. It's just that I'm not sure that it does as much as people think that it does.
Maybe, but, like, I think the point is that, like, let's say, like, 100 people watch handball, like, 50 people pick it up, you know, 30 to 40 realize that they suck at handball, and they don't stick with it, but the 10 that do, that makes sense.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Have you ever watched handball on TV outside the Olympics?
No, because it's not on TV. It's only on TV at the Olympics.
Right, that's my point, though, is that it being on TV at the Olympics, it hasn't necessarily led to anything else outside the Olympics for a sport like handball. And so I think to assume that it's necessarily going to for lacrosse, there's not necessarily the evidence to support it that it's going to happen.
Wait, does handball have an internet TV network?
I don't know.
Then we beat handball. Right?
Right, that's my point. Like, lacrosse is ahead of in terms of participation. Like, there's far more even girls participating in NFHS-sponsored lacrosse than there are in NFHS-sponsored gymnastics.
Right.
It's, like, by a factor of 4 or 5 times.
Yeah, but you're mixing the sports now. Team sports versus individual sports is not a discussion that we're getting into. We can't do that. And also, I think... This is a good capper by everybody. If you're, you know, that's good. 3 solid viewpoints on this, or 2 solid viewpoints in mine.
That's true. I was thinking we didn't plan to do this, but I think we should break this into 2 podcasts, and we'll just do this one. We'll cut it off here, and then I think Dan is going to leave, and Kyle and I will come back and talk MLL.
But I have thoughts on Space Jam.
Oh, we got to do Space Jam, though.
Oh, okay. We'll do Space Jam. Does Dan want to stick around for Space Jam?
Yes.
Okay. Why don't you introduce Space Jam then, Kyle?
All right. So... This Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, Chris Rosenthal and I's baby that we've been working on all season secretly was finally posted to InsideLacrosse.com. And that article details what would happen if we had to pick a team to play aliens to save us in a game of lacrosse for all of our lives against hostile aliens that are coming either to kidnap us or kill us. And the winner gets what they want. We picked a team that...
Wait, before you go on, can I interrupt and say, this is my biggest problem. I dispute that premise because the aliens have to steal the powers of people before we get to pick the team.
We know. We know.
Okay.
We understand that. We know the plot of Space Jam. That's why we wrote the lacrosse Space Jam. We just simplified it.
I know. Yes. Your article was not very true to the plot of Space Jam.
It does not have to be. It's an article about something that will never happen. It's a hypothetical article.
I know. I just think that if you're going to frame it in the context of the movie, you should be true to the plot of the movie.
Well, Dan has a good take on this, and I agree with him. However, we're not rewriting the article to go in with this take, but this is a good take, so I'll let him go.
So I had this take with Kyle because I was the one who edited, because apparently no one else in the Inside Lacrosse office has seen Space Jam, which is appalling. But... So
wait,
I
really?
Yes, that's real.
Yes, that I was forwarded this because I would get the references, and there are some great references. I got to give them that. But as someone who read it, I was like, this doesn't really line up with the plot of Space Jam. You're actually kind of just giving them a list of the players' talent they should steal. So I agree with you on that point. But I said, wouldn't like the person who would say would be the Michael Jordan of lacrosse be Michael Powell, because he's someone who is not currently playing, and he would fly under the radar of the aliens, but then, out of nowhere, come to save the Earth by, coming out of retirement and essentially playing in this game. That's my hot take.
I agree.
That's a fantastic take.
I agree. And I'm 100% agreed. I'm agreed. We're agreed.
We are agreed.
However, I dispute all of this criticism of a hypothetical article about aliens... And us playing them for the future of mankind. It's a premise that we took from Space Jam for ourselves and wrote an article about. We are not remaking Space Jam. I'm not writing the script. It's not happening.
Yeah, if you're not going to be true to the plot, really all you did is just come up with your all-MLL team.
No, that's not true. We did it specifically. We put freaks specifically designed to beat aliens.
Okay, I guess you're right. It's not an all MLS.
It's not.
Let's just kind of forget that it's not with the premise and just kind of have fun with it. I mean, did you see the graphic?
Did you? Oh, can we talk about the graphic? Matt Cain is my hero. I and Dan can attest to this because he was in the office. I'm in Baltimore right now. I asked our art director and creative director Matt Cain to whip up a graphic for this article. And he kind of just looked at me like, I mean, he's got a lot to do. And I was like, please, 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 please do this. And he's like, okay, I got you. And he did it in like maybe an hour and a half. And he sent it to me. And I got it on my phone while I was visiting East Coast Eyes and Greg Keneally. Sorry, Dan, you didn't go. I didn't invite you.
Tears.
I know, tears. But I got back. And the first thing I did was march into Matt Cain's office, tell him to get out of his chair. And I hugged him like a man hugs another man. There was a lot of love there. I'm very appreciative of that graphic. It is awesome. It is the perfect graphic for the thing that Chris Rosie and I created together. I asked Dan when he was editing it if he could pick out the bits that I wrote versus what Chris wrote. And he's right like probably like 80% of the time. But there's some good ones that you could pick out that either one of us could have written. And it was a lot of fun, and only my stuff got cut, so it's all good.
You should talk about the reaction you got
there.
Oh, yeah, and also, I got a lot of great reaction from it personally, just people tweeting and texting. Our women's editor was like, I'm laughing reading this. I can't believe that you got this up. I can't believe this happened, but it did happen. It took a while. It took some convincing from the brass. I'm not going to lie to you, but I'm very happy with... the product. I hope everyone had fun with it. I know, like, I've been pretty negative all year on MLL stuff, so it was good to put out something that was only positive. And for people to read it and enjoy it and have fun with it and, you know, even have hot takes on it like you guys do. You're right. No one's saying you're wrong. It's just a little too deep into an article. It's not real. A little bit.
Dude, just imagine 3 years from now there's going to be, you know, the Pals versus the Monstars movie. Space Jam 2, Lacrosse Space
Jam. That's true. That's true because now theoretically Casey Powell could go under the radar too if he stays retired.
And Bill Murray will be in it too, and it's going to be amazing.
Who?
Bill Murray.
Oh.
The greatest bench performance of all time?
That's right.
Come on now.
He doesn't play defense.
No, he doesn't.
Maybe that's the article we need to write next, though, is guys who aren't currently playing in the MLL whose talent would go under the radar that we could actually use to take on a team, the aliens.
Ooh, what's his name? The guy in every Adam Sandler movie.
The guy in every... David Spade?
No.
I don't know. The guy in every Adam Sandler movie.
His name escapes me. I apologize.
Kevin James.
No. It's, what's his name? Dante.
Oh. Yes. He's a lacrosse guy.
Yeah, he loves lacrosse. He's a player.
That's a good point. That's a good point. All right, any other thoughts on Space Jam before we roll out? Thanks again to Chris Rosenthal for, you know, doing a lot of heavy lifting with it. It was a great job.
I have real thoughts on the content, but we'll save those for the MLL podcast.
Okay, that's fair. All right, so we're gonna say goodbye to
wait,
Dan.
Wait! I got one more fire
one
take.
One more fire take before you go.
So yeah, as someone who just watched only the MLL semifinals, I'm gonna pick Denver, and you know why? Because you both are gonna pick the Machine. And the team that's supposed to win the championship has not won the championship at all in 2016.
Ooh. All right.
That is a fire take. Come on. Hey, Broncos weren't supposed to win the Super Bowl.
Teams from Ohio, though, are 1-0 in championships. And John Grant Jr. is like 6-0 in MLL championships.
5-0.
So you're picking them 5-0. I was close.
Yeah. No, you're right.
There's a lot going against you on that take as well.
I don't know, man. Every team that's supposed to win has lost.
Ohio's my team, so to say that I'm picking them, like I of course I'm going to pick them.
Also, you don't know who I'm picking. We're going to save that for the podcast. That's why people listen to the podcast.
And not to mention Denver, it's not like Denver. Denver's won 7 games in a row. It's not like they're, you know.
Yeah, but anybody who watched that semifinal knows that with Ohio's, you know, manipulative style of play, that they should be favored.
Controlling.
I like manipulative, but...
Okay.
All right, that's Abern. Abern out.
He just wanted to say Abern out before
Wait. Before you go, though, plug your... You need some more Twitter followers, Dan. Plug your Twitter.
Yeah, Dan, you gotta plug your Twitter, man. Plug your Twitter. Come back. No, like on the podcast. Open the door and come back and say what your Twitter is.
He actually just left.
He said he wanted to leave on Abern out. I'm not gonna hate on that. That's fine.
Alright. Follow me on Twitter at DanAbern2423. Give me a follow. I'm really big on the crying Jordan memes.
Yeah, he's really good with the crying Jordan memes. Mostly of himself.
Like this delay, everybody who was listening has now turned off the podcast, so nobody heard that Twitter plug.
It's all good.